Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Forrest Stevens Show. That last episode was weird. I just edited it. I thought I was going to have to edit it hard because it was about a lot of things, but a lot of it was about privilege. And I was just like, am I talking about like white privilege in there? And am I just saying stuff that's kind of crazy? And I was really up on some cannabis, some marijuana, and I'm saying it weird so that YouTube doesn't demonetize me like it already has for my entire channel. But so I just edited that. I just checked it out. It was wild. I was in a state that I didn't know, which was Iowa. Yeah. I later confirmed. I looked on Google Maps finally. But when you're that heightened and that hot as well, you know, I was in like the middle of a heat wave on edibles. YouTube. Why is YouTube only for children now? Why can't we say words? Why can't we talk about subjects? It's really weird. Really, really weird. YouTube used to be crazy, man. And it was never that crazy. Like there was way crazier video websites out there, but like you could do a lot more on YouTube than you can now. It's really changed quite a lot, actually. Doesn't mean I'm going over to Rumble with my good pal Russell. That's not going to happen either. That site sucks. and maybe I'm just saying that because I bought at IPO and, thinking that, you know, their business model would be better than it is. And also just not being a good investor at the time. And, you know, I would have done better maybe selling covered calls or selling short on that one. What a crap company that is. Yeah, so last episode, I was in the middle of Iowa and living in the van, and so much has happened since. It was September 6th, and now it is September 29th. So it's been a while since I've done one of these. I've done recorded three interview ones. I think I'm going to try. I mean, it might be tough. Right now it feels tough because I have so much other stuff to do, and I'll get into that. But I recorded three interviews that I want to start releasing every single week, an interview episode and a solo episode on here, because I think it'll just kind of build this podcast out and it will allow me to talk with people that I find interesting. And Lord knows I need to talk to more people, especially that I find interesting. And have you ever had a conversation with somebody that talks a lot that is very boring? Because I have, and it is close to the definition of hell for me. I think if I was in hell, along with, you know, the devil poking me in the ass with that pitchfork, along with it being a little too hot, there would be somebody telling me a boring story with zero room to interrupt them, with the inability to get away from them, or the inability to talk myself. But I'm not, I mean, that's a problem with me, actually. That is a problem with me, is I allow there to be a lot of space. I don't put myself out there vocally in conversationally as much as a lot of people do. And that's because I allow for space, and I find that creates and facilitates a better conversation, even though it takes a little bit of time to get there. However, that allows that space for somebody who loves to talk. It's hard to kind of get a word in or just get away from it. Like I said, it's up there with that pokey stick in the butt by the devil. So that besides, I mean, why did I even start talking about that? So a lot has happened, and the reason I say that it's that I want to release those weekly is because right now it is hard for me to get time and space to actually be able to record those interviews. We've moved into a cabin. There isn't an extra room here. I don't have the studio here. If you're watching the video, I'm in a corner of the cabin. It has a loft, so there is a separate room, but it's a little tight in here, and And the reason that it's very tight in here right now, or that it's tighter than it should be, is because I don't know if you can see this on the video, but there is a box beside me, a box full of winter clothes that we don't have space for until we paint the room upstairs. Oh, and we also need to do some drywall work. And, you know, then we can build out the closet and actually have space for this stuff. So, and if you go upstairs, there's even more boxes. And down here, we've basically got the kitchen 80% set up, the living room 80% set up, this 80% set up. But there's a lot of spaces in here that we have 20% set up. It's that old 80-20 rule. And, you know, it's just going to take time and it's going to take a lot of work for me. So I'm finding it hard not only to find the space, but to find the time and the energy to be able to do these podcasts. So I don't have that backstock of these solo episodes either. So I'm recording this and it's going to be published next week. I was 3 weeks ahead there at one time, which was, gave me some nice breathing room. Like I said, the last one I recorded, September 6th. So I had that nice breathing room and I'm only just getting to a point, even though there's so much to do, I'm just getting to a point where, okay, I have 30 minutes or so to talk to a camera. I have a little bit of time. I can do this. I can sneak this in a little bit and, hopefully I have something to say, because that's the other thing, right? Is when I'm in this state of just working so hard on so much physical parts of my life, by the end of the day or by the time that there is time, I'm exhausted. And the activities that I've done have not sparked any sort of interesting thought into my head. So I don't have nothing to reflect on. I have nothing to really talk about. And that's an interesting thing. I think a lot of people are there. They don't even have the space to have a thought that's outside of their realm of what they're actively doing. If somebody is so busy with everything, when are you going to just have a moment to sit there and reflect or sit there and write and journal? I mean, it has to be a very conscious thing that you are doing if you are that busy. And then in that way, it just becomes another thing that you do, and it doesn't have that, it might not, or it might lose that feeling, or it might have that feeling not as much, that feeling of joy that comes from the spontaneous joy of creation. It might have more of a feeling of formula to it and of force. It's good to force yourself to be creative, though. You know, there's that Jerry Seinfeld quote, and I'm paraphrasing now, but, you know, he forces himself to write comedy because just as if he is a construction worker who is forcing themselves to put the hard hat on, construction vest, and get to hammering and nailing or whatever else construction workers do. And, you know, he thinks of himself as that construction worker clocking in. I'm going to go do my work. Or he did at one time, at least. And, you know, he's still a very active comedian for the age and the just the time that he spent being a comedian. But that's a creative field. That's that act of reflection. Comedy is totally like a form of self-reflection, writing down jokes, because it's you reflecting on something. There needs to be something going on for you to talk about. And it doesn't have to be personal necessarily, but it has to be relatable. And that's where the best jokes come in there, is, you know, relatable, and then have a twist and have something unexpected and have something really silly and all that, depending on your taste in comedy. But just like that, I think writers, and I do put myself as a writer now. I mean, not only just because I've written a book, but, you know, I've written documentaries and I've written stories, and I've written a lot of things in my life, and I spend time writing, and I haven't been able to force myself to do that because it just cannot take priority over everything else right now. Just, you know, we're just establishing where we've been living here. We've been at this place, I think, what, like 12 days? Holy crap. It's only been 12 days. We have done so much work. And a lot of those days I've been off, away from home, because when you live at the ocean, when you live on an island, traveling is quite a thing. You have to, you know, I've only ever lived on islands, really. And yeah, because of the ruralness of this, I haven't even been here that whole 12 days. I've had to go and travel to get supplies and all these kind of things, and to get our stuff. I had to meet with the moving company, and that actually went over pretty well, but it's just been exhausting. It's been exhausting, and it's been hard for me to like want to sit in this space and not just be like, I'm exhausted. It's hard for me to have anything to even talk about right now. And I am, I'm clocking in right now. I'm forcing myself to do this because I know that the longer I go, the more difficult this becomes. I find that the more frequent that I do it, the more it's on my mind, the more I'll end up writing something interesting, and the more I'll be like, oh, let's go do that. It's easy. I have it set up. I mean, I have this mic set up. I have this camera set up. It's kind of starting to look like something. It's starting to become easier. And I only filmed one of these. Well, I filmed one of these on the road, and I recorded two. So I did an audio one as well. But on the road, it's super hard. It's so hard to find a space and to have the energy to do this. So my hats go off to any of those travelers doing a podcast. I think it's not an easy thing to do. And yeah, I mean, that's basically got me caught up to here. So we're living in this cabin. It's very trippy as well. I mean, it's the cabin that my mom lived in. My mom lived here for a few years. Not sure exactly how many years, maybe 6-7 years. And it's where she died. Like, she died right over there, just outside. Like, it's really crazy, actually, to be here. I kind of was like, okay, this is such a good spot. This is good, such a good place for us. This is a good community. There's a lot of opportunity here. So a lot of that was driving me moving here. The dwelling itself is also fantastic. It's the perfect size. It's you know, just really, really good situation in a lot of ways. And I kind of, you know, I got asked the question a couple times, like, what do you think it was going to be like to move to the place that mom lived at? It was mom's place. You know, this is Jen's cabin. And I kind of just was like, oh, you know, I think it'll be kind of good. And like, maybe I'll have a little bit more connection to that and to my mom. And it definitely does do that. I mean, it's like, this place has been rented by two people since my mom living in here, just for short periods of time. But there's still a lot of my mom here. There's things that my mom did. Like, there was my mom was a Waldorf teacher. So she loved using like watercolor painting and painting just things and adding, like sewing things and adding things to things, being crafty, basically, is what I'm saying. And there was like a piece of like feltish type paper that had been painted by her with just the primary colors, because that's basically where you start with as like a Waldorf, I don't know, there's a whole philosophy in Waldorf school stuff. I did Waldorf school for, I don't know, 6 years of my life, I guess, something like that. And that's a big part of it, is allowing the colors to kind of just speak for themselves. You're not trying to paint anything, really. You're just using watercolors and you're creating shapes, maybe, but like, you're not outlining, you're not drawing. It's not like that, especially to begin with. And my mom was a kindergarten teacher, or early childhood education. So that was where her, that's what she did all the time. Like, she did that for herself as well. And so anyway, there was this felt piece of paper on the garbage can, and the garbage can was in the cupboard on the side of the door. And we took that off. We got this kind of dual separator garbage can thing that's in the space. But we took the felt piece of paper that my mom made that was on that garbage can, and we transferred it to our garbage can. And it's now in our living space. And there were dishes here that were my mom's. There's just like, this whole place has been touched by my mom. And it's, you know, her, she made these bunting flags and they're still hanging up outside. And it feels very interesting. I think about her sometimes, and I think about the times that I spent here with her and the different experiences that she had here. And it does make me feel closer, but at times it makes me feel like I can't get that out of my head. There are certain times where that's like, it's just like a thought in my head. It's almost like an intrusive thought. I'm just like, oh, this was my mom's place. My mom lived here. We're like, or like my mom died over here. You know, it's just like, it's a very interesting thing to think of. And I don't think it's not necessarily really that abnormal either to be like living in the house where you've had a relative die, because that's a lot of times where people die is in their home. And you just kind of have had that experience in this location. And you can kind of create as much around that as you want, or as much or as little around that as you want. But there is part of me that has thoughts come in, and that's why I refer to them as intrusive thoughts. They're not thoughts that I've chosen to think about. They're at times when I'm doing something else, and then all of a sudden I'm thinking about how my mom lived here. And it's just kind of like we don't really control our thoughts. We do in certain moments. Like right now I'm consciously training my brain to think on this subject and to project it vocally. And we have moments of consciously, productively channeling our brain power. But a lot of times our brain is just doing its thing in the background and just bringing up, hey, is this anything? Hey, do you need to think about this? Is this something? And sometimes I just have that thought, hey, your mom died there. And it's kind of dark, it's kind of morbid, but it's kind of weird to talk about. And I laugh at it because it is that level where it's like, for me, it's like a lot of things that are weird are funny. And a lot of things that are weird, it's like you can either laugh or cry at. And there really is that thing with comedy and with laughter where sometimes you laugh when you should be crying, and sometimes you cry when you could be laughing. And I said should there at the first time, but it's really just could both ways. And because there's no obligation to do one or the other. It's just you reacting to it because that's what your emotions do to you. They create that sensation. And those two things are linked. Those two things are linked so much that sometimes you can laugh so hard that you cry. And it's like, wow, that is really, really connected. And there's this release that happens after laughing about something, just as there is a release that happens after you cry about something. Although crying, not all it's cracked up to be. It hurts the eyes. You got puffy face after. Not fun. Not fun. Not sure if it's cracked up to be anything, but if it is, it's not all that it is cracked up to be. So I kind of, yeah, I've talked about how this place is perfect size, perfect blah, blah, blah. It's not perfect in every way, but it's very good for us. It has probably more windows. That's what's so crazy about this place, is it probably has more square footage of windows in a one room cabin and loft than our house does in Ontario. Our house in Ontario, that was one of the biggest reasons for moving, actually, was because the age of it, the builder didn't really build in a lot of windows because windows would be very expensive in 1929, and it would be very expensive and very and make it much more difficult to have lots of windows when it gets to negative 40 and you have to heat the place. So even if we were to add windows, you know, that does create more heating costs. But the big part we didn't add more windows to was it's a lot of work. It's a lot more work to add windows and retrofit them, like retroactively add windows, than it is to add windows when you're building something. I mean, people do it, but it's just a lot of work, a lot of money, and then, you know, we were for a while there, we were debating how long we were going to stay there. So how much improvement did we want to do to the place, right? And that's, you know, it doesn't, what does it do? What does it do when you don't have enough windows? Well, windows are a window to the outside. I love using the same word to describe something. but it's a way for you to be inside and outside at the same time, and you can see what the outside world is like, and you have access to the outside world, or a look into the outside world from being inside. And this house also, I mean, another reason that house had a problem was out of this big, beautiful mudroom with probably more windows in the mudroom than the rest of the house. And that mudroom created another separation from the outside. And the reason that's good is because when the wind hits, it creates another separation from the outside. When that negative 40 in Ontario hits, it creates another separation from outside. Now, the reason that's bad is it's because it keeps you indoors more. When you are separated from the outside, you can live within a world in a house where that outside part of your property is not really part of your life. You're just inside all the time. And it's very easy to be because you don't see the outside world. You're not as connected to the outside world. So there's one door to go outside here, which makes it very easy to go outside. And the outside here is very beautiful. I mean, it was very nice in Ontario as well, but it wasn't for us in a lot of ways. We had a beautiful property, but there were some problems with it. I will say that. And there was, I mean, one of the problems was privacy, right? And out here we have privacy. We have accessibility to an outside that really inspires us with awe. You know, we see ravens flying around. We have only an outdoor shower, so we have to go outside to shower. We have this big outdoor bathtub that's a big soaker tub that's just amazing to just lay in and watch the birds fly around. Watch this. We have one massive tree here that's this old Douglas fir tree, and it towers above and has these beautiful, huge limbs on it. And it's, when you look at it, it's one of those things that's with nature and with things of size a lot of times where you can't even believe that it's real. It kind of just feels, and that inspires awe. Like, it's almost like you can't comprehend it fully. It's too much to take in. And that just happens whether you're on, whether you've smoked any weed and it's feeling even crazier or not. It's like you go outside and you feel like, wow, this is beautiful. And will that wear off? I mean, we're 12 days in. I mean, that's always a risk, but I think all you have to do is leave somewhere and come back, and it reinvigorates that a little bit. And it'll hit some sort of comfortable plateau, I'm sure, but that connection to the outside is really important for my mental health and the mental health of my partner. And we also have more interaction with people. We have people that actually live on the same property as us, and we have daily or, you know, every other day sometimes, you know, there's sometimes day in between, but we have interaction with people. We're talking to people. It's not just a grocery store conversation with the clerk. Hey, how's it going? Good. How's your day? Good. All right. Yeah. Thanks for cashing me out and groceries or whatever. And bye. You know, that's not the only conversation I have with somebody else. We were so isolated where we were living, and it was great when we needed to be isolated. I mean, we bought that as a COVID home. We bought that when everybody was needing to lock down and all this stuff with that. And it's just like, it worked as a sanctuary to be inside and to do yoga every single day and to write a book about having trippy thoughts and about self-expression and self-improvement. And that's what I did. And, but 2 years was enough. And we stayed there 3. And it sucks, you know. We went there thinking, okay, this could possibly be our, not forever, but like a decade-long place. And we're out of there by 3, and 3 being too long. So we don't want to do that. We don't want to do the same here. But, you know, it's just, we don't know where life is going to take us. But right now, this place is perfect for us. In many ways that other place was not. And in many ways that we have figured out and found that to be very important for us. So it's good to have our needs being met with this place and to be moved in somewhere where we feel like our needs are being met in a lot of ways. And I think by the end of next week, we will have a lot of things 80% done here. Some things a little bit more. You know, it's not like that house we bought where it was that whole 2 years I was working on it, or not even the whole 2 years, the whole 3 years I was working hard on that house. This place should be done by the time the cold weather hits. And I'm doing a lot of improvements to this place, and we have an agreement with the person renting it out to us that is fair and works well. And, you know, I'm going to be doing some drywalling, insulating, building a better outdoor shower, and putting a new vanity in the bathroom. I mean, when you move into a rental, it's like renters, yeah, they don't really do much to the place except move furniture around and stuff. And it's like, that's understandable, but that's just not how we are. You know, we're not content living somewhere with things that we don't like. So, and it's easy enough for us to do that, especially with the agreement that we've worked out. So we are going to be improving this place, even though we are renting. And that is probably more uncommon and abnormal than living somewhere where someone died. So death is all around us. Death is all around us. And it's interesting that we live in a, you know, I went to this talk and it was all about living in a death phobic society. And it was about more than that, but that was one part that kind of reached out to me and spoke to me a little bit. And it's like, yeah, we do live in a death phobic society, and we don't need to, right? We don't need to be afraid of death, but we need to understand it. It's a weird thing. We need to understand weird things in this life. That's what we need to understand, is the weird stuff in life, right? If you have lived somewhere, or if, you know, we can paint this kind of caricature of somebody who has lived somewhere that is very isolated, that is very kind of one way. Let's say, you know, in the middle of the country in North America, whether that's Canada or the States, and you have people that you know, and you know what they're like, and they're not that different from you. You know, they kind of think the same way. They have similar ideas of things. There's nobody being that different. And you haven't gone and traveled the world, and you haven't seen how other people are different because of where they are from and the different ideas that were instilled in them, the different ways they lived. Then you could, you know, if you had somebody who was from a different country, and you met them, and they were in your space, in your town, whatever, if they were living there or whatever, you could have a fear of them, and you could have dislike of them. You could, because of the way they are, you could think ill of them based on how they are, or how your beliefs of how they are. And that's because to you, they're weird. And maybe you're weird to them, or maybe not. Maybe they have some acceptance of who you are. And, you know, there's always different circumstances and situations and different scale of that. But we're painting, you know, these stereotypes and these characteristics here. And the reason that's a problem is because they believe that is weird. There's something weird about that. And you know, you could describe that in different ways than just saying weird, but weird transfers over to other things as well. When you begin to understand the weirdness, the perceived weirdness, the actual weirdness, whatever, you know, you begin to not find it weird, and you begin to understand it. You know, that's what happens when you understand something, is you begin to understand it. And it's like, the more understanding we have of other people and why they are the way they are, the less hatred, the less misgivings we have, the less problems we have with them, and probably with ourselves and the world at large, because we are all very different from region to region, person to person, country to country. I mean, it goes infinitely big to infinitely small. We are all different. All of us are different. Even if you think you have the same idea as somebody else, they could have some hidden things that they don't express. You know, it's so hard to actually truly know somebody, because people are a lot more reserved than they think they are. You know, they think they are being themselves to everybody around them, but that self that they are projecting is different than the self that they feel. So what I'm saying, I'm trying to preach, just understanding your neighbor and your neighbor who is different than you. We got to all just look at the things that we feel are weird in this world and begin to try to understand them. Research them, talk about them, think about them, write about them, ask about them, communicate, have conversations about them. We don't need to be a death phobic society just because we think death is weird. Death is weird because what the hell happens? Is it just like a computer shutting off? Is it just a brain? Is a brain just a computer and you're just hitting that control alt delete and you're just going not to the task manager but straight to shutdown, and you're shutting her down and you're unplugging it and there's just no electricity, there's no blood, there's no sugar, which is basically the electricity of our systems, of our, if we look at our body like a mechanical system or an electrical system. I'm really fumbling my words this time. Maybe, but you know, a lot of people think, and that's the thing, when there's one thing that multiple people have different ideas about, it becomes very complicated, and complicated is another way to say kind of weird. It's a little bit hard to understand. And you know, a lot of people think that, you know, you go somewhere, you have a soul that's within you, and that part is uniquely you, and your body is basically just a machine and a vessel to transport you through this existence. And when you die, you go to a different existence, whether that's being reincarnated into this physical world again, or whether that's leaving to a different plane of existence, like cloudy heaven, where for some reason we've portrayed the words of different books into creating these ideas that there's humanoid-like superior beings, whether multi of them or singular, as in a monolithic or mono, is it monolithic? No, it's whatever, the mono religious, mono god, one god. The words just escaping my head. Like I said, you know, I literally am just so exhausted. I've had such little sleep since moving here and working so hard on everything. But anyway, it's just like when there's all these different ideas, it's very hard to understand something, and then something becomes very complicated, and then there's becomes some fear about it because you're just like, I don't know what happens. Is it good? Is it bad that somebody died? Can it be neutral? Can it be good? You know, can it be good that somebody died? Whoa, that's a hard question to answer. Can it be good that somebody's died? Well, maybe. If somebody's violently attacking you and then they stop because they're dead, that's good for you because you're not being violently attacked anymore. That's just a very clear cut case there. But you know, there's just a lot of gray area with people's lives and with death in general. And we don't know, oh, is there a ghost floating around? Is there somebody up above when you're doing something that is looking down on you and saying, I shouldn't do that, I'm disapproving, even though I'm dead. I mean, it's just like, it's so crazy. And it's like, even the way I'm talking about this, like, there's also like certain ways to talk about death that are like more respectful than others. And it's like, then it becomes not as approachable because it's like, oh, I don't want to be disrespectful of somebody else's beliefs on death or somebody else's feelings on death or somebody else's feelings on this specific death. And, then it becomes hard to communicate. And when it's hard to communicate, it's hard to process. We need, like, it's like the things that are disrupting our insides the most, you know, our internals the most, are the hardest things to talk about. They're not the things that we tell everybody about. They are the challenging things that I think most of us keep inside to some degree and share very sparingly because they are hard to talk about, either for us or for others or both. And those are the things that should be talked about. You know, we should not be talking about the things that are so external that they don't even affect us. We should not be talking about what Elon Musk is doing. We should not be talking about what Bill Gates is doing, what George Soros is doing, what whoever the fuck else is in these conspiracy theories. I mean, this is the biggest conspiracy theory right here, I'll tell you, is that conspiracy theories, the reason there are so many is because there's someone at the top or some group that wants us to be distracted by all the bullshit so that we don't focus on ourselves, that we focus our time and energy by watching one conspiracy video. You are spending whatever, the 10, 15, 20 minutes, 3 hour long podcast, whatever. You are spending your time and energy on something that you most likely 99.99999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999 that many percent, you know, that 0.0 whatever the fuck, percent actually has some ability to affect, right? Most conspiracy theories, and I'm saying that like the vast majority, you have zero ability to do zero things about. And that's a double negative, but you have zero ability to do anything about. And the real thing that you should be focusing is the things within your immediate life and the things within you that are problems. Because all these conspiracy theories are stating that there's some problem. There's some organization doing this. There's some this. There's, the, you know, the vaccine's got a microchip in it. There's misinformation. It's like there's conspiracies on both sides and up and down. I mean, what the fuck is it? Both sides, left and right, is the only way we can talk. I think that our conversations are three-dimensional. They're not linear like that. Our beliefs and our thoughts. And what I'm saying is that for me, and you know, obviously we spend time, we spend effort on things that we don't have direct control on, that don't directly affect us. We spend time watching TV, being engrossed in stories that don't really actually have anything to do with you, but they're entertaining. And I think that there are a group of people that are interested in conspiracy because it's entertaining. And it's hard to differentiate those sometimes. But I think that what you see a lot of, you end up believing. And so it's risky to be interested in something because of the world that we live in with big tech, where if you are interested in something, you will see more of it. And it becomes a confirmation bias because you see more of it, you think that it's true. And it happens on a very unconscious level sometimes. You don't consciously think, oh, okay, I'm going to decide that this is true and that this is false. You're just like, oh, well, I think that's true because I've seen a bunch of information about it and all seems legit. It all seems like it's coming from legit sources. I trust this one person who, you know, vets information. And where are they getting their information from? How are they vetting? It's just like, it's so complicated to get actual true information from anything that's actually going on outside your own life, that it's basically not worth paying attention to. The news is basically not worth paying attention to. Like, not until it actually affects your life. That's what I've found as a 28-year-old who has realized that since they were about 17, that the news really doesn't really affect you very much. And it's like, I look at economic news to some degree, and I've actually fallen out of that a little bit, but I was quite interested in that because of the different learning that can happen and how it can actually affect you, because it affects your money. And your money is your stored energy, and your stored energy takes time, and your time is your life force. So it affects you. And, you know, people can look at that information just for to make a trade or to do something like that, but it actually speaks, basically the money, the world is run on money. And it's not like, oh, you got to follow the money to find out the truth. It's like, no, there's actually just really obvious decisions that are being made, like what the interest rate is to borrow at, because we live in a debt-based economy. And so credit is everything. Credit is the way we function in this world and dictates so much of what is actually happening. And when there's lots of credit, there's lots of money printing, and money becomes worth less not worthless, but worth less over time. And so these things actually have huge effects on you as an individual, but they are a much bigger, further away thing than, you know, than things that are close, like, you know, the people around you, the food you eat, the exercise you do, the water you drink, you know, the conversations you have with others, the work that you do. These things are much closer to home. But there are some things out there in the world that do have big, that are very far away that you have no control over. But what you do have control over is your response to them. If you know that we are in an inflationary environment, then you can do something about it with your own personal finances. If you know that we're in a deflationary environment, you could do something about it. Now, the problem is once again, there's a lot of different opinions. There's a lot of information. So it's like, good luck sorting through that. Good luck finding somebody that you trust. Good luck finding good quality information, especially ahead of people. And it's something that shifts so much that good luck keeping up with that. Good luck beating the market is basically what I'm saying. Good luck. So that's about it. Sorry to end on such a down note there. But yeah, that's about it. If you want to support the show, we do have a Patreon that is completely basically inactive. You're basically just sending a donation if you join that. And I appreciate everyone who does. I mean, you are the kindest people in the world. You actually believe in what I'm doing and have some shared vision with me. That's amazing. If you want to donate but get something back from it, buy my book. It's called Tripping. It's linked in the description. It's available on Amazon as a paperback or as a Kindle. I recommend the paperback as it becomes a journal, trip companion, and random insights that you can flip open to. So enjoy that. Link is in the description. Buy the book. If you've been thinking about it, just buy it. Check it out. It's a great way to support this show, and it validates me. And we all need a little bit of validation, you know. So thanks for validating me by buying my book, everyone, and for listening to my podcast. All right, till the next one. Bye.